So I'm here with Betty Adams Green. Ms. Green, you're the president of the American Correctional Association, the ACA. So I have the conference press packet and all the material, but maybe any way you could just start out by very briefly summarizing the purpose of your organization and who some of the members are.
The American Correctional Association was actually started in 1870 by a group of people that were interested in prisons and in improving the conditions and the treatment in those prisons. Actually, Rutherford B. Hayes was the instrumental in the founding of ACA and was its first president. Since that time, we have welcomed everyone from this country or from other countries that work in any aspect of the field of corrections. That's why if you walk around this conference, you will see people from the Salvation Army and Volunteers of America. You'll see folks that work in jails and prisons. You'll see individuals that work in juvenile programs, group homes, halfway houses, even juvenile facilities, detention centers, as well as community programs for substance abusers or mental health programs or probation and parole. So we are the only umbrella organization that welcomes all practitioners and all of those interested. Everyone here is not a practitioner. Some are working in colleges and universities and are teaching and are doing research on different aspects of our correctional system. So it's open to everyone.
As I'm sure you're aware, there's been some protesters outside throughout the past few days while this conference has been going on, raising, well, I guess, what seems like legitimate concerns about, you know, the amazing growth of the prison population over the past several years, of privatization of prisons and other things of that sort. Now, your organization, the ACA, has issued a press release calling many of their claims unfounded. Could you maybe explain that?
Well, I think we issued it because they are unfounded. We have had policies in this organization going back almost from the beginning that encourage, instead of continually building prisons and incarcerating people, that encourage the development of community programs, alternative sentencing, treatment programs when it's safe to keep individuals in the community. We also have for a long time supported reentry programs to help offenders that are coming back into the system or into our society adjust and rejoin their families in a productive way. We also have policies that promote prevention programs and intervention programs and family programs. So I just think they're misinformed.
Are there issues that you see that you and them would disagree on?
I don't know that we would disagree. I think that if what they want is a safe, humane prison system that only incarcerates those who are truly a danger to society, and even while incarcerating those individuals, provides quality programming and reentry skills for them, and then focuses also on community programming, alternative sentencing, and reentry, as well as prevention and intervention, then we're with them.
Well, how all the official positions that the ACA has taken, how do they arrive at those positions? Are they, like, voted on by the members?
There's a process. We have a Policies and Resolutions Committee. Any member of the organization can propose a policy to that committee. The committee will draft a policy. If there's enough interest in it, they will send it to the executive committee. The executive committee will review it. They may make changes. They may review it. They may not like it. They may send it back for more work. They may send it to other committees to get their input. Or if they think it's ready, they will move it on to the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors has the same set of options. And if they decide to move it on, it goes to the Delegate Assembly, which is the larger representative body of the association. And if the Delegate Assembly passes it, then it is a policy of the organization.
Now, some of the stances that the ACA has taken, which actually sound very progressive and very much in line with what the protesters have called for example, the ACA has opposed the mandatory minimum drug sentencing laws.
We also have made it very, very clear that we believe that one of the things that was mentioned to me was telephone rates, and that there are facilities that at least appear to gouge the rates that inmates are charged for the use of the phones in the facilities. We have a very strong policy on that, encouraging that the fees be reasonable. Now, obviously, when people provide a service, they're not going to do it for nothing. There's going to have to be some element. So I think to say that profit is bad, it is probably an inaccurate statement. I think people that provide supplies to hospitals probably make a profit, but I don't think anybody's wanting to close the hospital down. But those profits should be very reasonable, and they should not be on the backs of those that are incarcerated or on their families. We wholeheartedly support that and have for a long time. So I just think they're very misinformed.
Is there some way that the ACA sort of monitors or looks over its member organizations to see that they're in compliance with your beliefs?
We don't monitor our members. I don't think any professional association monitors its members. There are procedures in every state for reviews. The federal government has procedures for reviews. There are groups, for instance, Nashville Youth Law Center frequently will go into juvenile programs if they get complaints. So there are groups out there that do that, and they do quite a good job of it. What we do, however, is we encourage our members that participate in ACA to adopt our policies, and obviously they wouldn't keep coming, I don't think, if they didn't agree with those policies. Those who go through the accreditation process, yes, we do hold them accountable for the accreditation standards, and yes, they do have to conform.
Yeah, I did actually want to get a little bit into the accreditation process. There's been different things said about it. How exactly are organizations accredited? From looking over the process, it seems as though there'd sort of be a conflict of interest that different members sort of accredit each other, sort of I pat you on the back, you pat me on the back. And is there some sort of enforcement if, you know, they don't comply?
I think that's certainly a simplification. Facilities that go through accreditation, the auditors are never, first of all, from that facility, and we would be very careful not to send someone in that was close, rather in a personal relationship or professional relationship to that facility. But I think realistically, the best people to tell you if a facility is meeting the minimum standards is someone who knows correctional programming and correctional standards. And I think it would be foolish, for instance, for me to go in to accredit a hospital. I don't have the necessary information to make decisions about whether they were doing the right things or not. I could, however, go in and make a decision on a juvenile facility. So we try to use people who are experts in their field to go in and do that. And I think it's also important for people to understand that accreditation does not mean you're perfect. It means that on the day of the audit, that the standards that are required for the safe and humane operation of that facility were met. It does not ensure that every staff person that works at that facility is a wonderful individual and is performing to the best of their ability. Anytime you have a profession that has grown as quickly as ours has and is as large as ours has, we are going to have problem individuals working in the system. We know that. That's one of the reasons we think it's so important to do professional development and training and accreditation. Accreditation requires that everyone who works in that facility, staff or volunteer, have a minimum amount of training, 4 weeks of training. That is absolutely required. Facilities that don't go through the accreditation process may or may not provide training.
What about the idea of including different groups besides specifically professional, criminal justice groups in the accreditation process? For example, some have suggested including prisoners in that process.
Well, I would not think that's a good idea to have them on the accreditation team, but every facility that is accredited has a section in the accreditation process that's called the quality of life. And those standards all refer to the way individual prisoners are treated in the daily operations of the facility. And when the auditors get to that point, they are required to talk to a random number of inmates or individuals in that facility. I have a facility in the juvenile court in Davidson County, a detention facility that was recently audited, and they talked to virtually every child there when they came in without staff being present. So there is input from the facility. And the operators of the facility do not get to choose which individuals we talk to.
Sure. I wanted to go back a little bit to, you were saying, you know, obviously they come to accredited organization, you know, any member organizations on any particular given day, and, you know, they have no way of ensuring that everyone's in compliance. There's certainly, you know, several tons of staff members and, you know, lots of different things to check. But there is, there are people who, I was listening to a speech from the other day, there was this other convention, I'm sure you're aware of, where there was someone from the ACLU, some prison project, a woman speaking, saying, citing numerous examples actually where right after organizations were actually accredited, there were violations that were found, lawsuits placed against different prisons and institutions of inhumane treatment. Actually, I also have an article here from the Boston Globe from a while ago, Dale Seacrest, I guess you're aware of him, who helped design the accreditation process, saying he's ashamed of some of the conditions of ACA accredited.
Obviously disagree with that. I'm not going to say we're perfect. I don't think any organization is, and I think when you accredit particularly large facilities that you are running the risk of missing something. I suppose that if someone wants to enter the accreditation process and lie or cheat, they can do that. And I'm not going to tell you that never happens. I'm going to tell you I don't think it happens very often, because accreditation is a very serious process, and it takes anywhere from a year to 18 months to go through the entire process. And I think most facilities would tell you that it would be, they wouldn't even attempt it if they were just going to fudge on it. But to say that we don't have anybody that does that, no, I can't say that.
We spoke about including groups like, for example, prisoners in the process. What about
the opting process? But I think they definitely should be talked with, and they are in the process now. Now, not necessarily every single inmate at every single facility, but large numbers. And in the case of my facility, I think every child that was there was spoken with.
The other thing that was suggested besides prisoners was having other outside organizations, such as like an Amnesty International type group, just monitoring to make sure there's no human rights violations or anything of that sort. What do you think of that?
Well, we have plenty of groups that do that. The Youth Law Center looks at juvenile facilities when they receive complaints. That there are legal aid bureaus that do that. I don't have a problem with their coming in. As long as it does not interfere with the effective and efficient and orderly operation of a facility. I think they need to go in following complaints. I don't think they need to go in to see if they can generate complaints.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It seems, you know, many of the positions the ACA has taken, for example, as we mentioned, mandatory minimum, you know, you're opposed to. I know the ACA is opposed to certain drug sentencing laws that would sort of discriminate against who's sentenced for what type of drug. It would have disproportionately affect black males. And I'm wondering, it seems that a lot of these different standards, if they were implemented, would actually have the effect of decreasing the prison population, which of course is good. But on the other hand, it seems that whether you like it or not, the prison industry, you know, makes money by filling the prisons. Is that counterproductive, or what do you think?
Well, I don't think the prison industry makes money by filling prisons. I don't think they're the ones that fill prisons. I think it's our courts that fill prisons, and they're following the laws that are adopted by the local legislatures or our national legislators. And I think it's unfortunate in this country that we have decided that the quick solution to everything is to incarcerate. We advocate, have advocated for years, and will continue to advocate for community programming, for treatment programs, and for prevention and intervention. But I will say that I think the media has been largely responsible for a lot of the get tough, gloom and doom kinds of information that's gone out on crime, particularly on juvenile crime. All of this talk about the super predators coming out have had the effect of legislators taking up bills that would decrease the age at which a juvenile could be transferred to adult court. The media has to assume some responsibility for that, not the merchants of the corrections field.
I agree with you. I think you're right. So many of these standards, not standards, but different positions, the ACA's policies, yes. Have you sort of actively campaigned for them? Have you lobbied for them? How's that?
Oh, sure. We take positions on legislation that goes through Congress. We will support it. Sometimes we will write the sponsors and make suggestions. We are not a lobbying group. That is not our purpose. Now, individual members may talk to their senators and their representatives. And obviously, our members are active in their local legislatures at home. But I can't remember a single time when the American Correctional Association has gone out and led a march to build more prisons. Now, we would say that if you have a very overcrowded facility where the conditions are dangerous both for the inmate and for the staff, that you need to do one of two things. You need to reduce that population, if at all possible, by alternative sentences and community programs, or if that is not possible given the laws of that state, then yes, you do need to build another facility, because to keep people tripled and quadruple celled makes no sense in this day and age.
Sure. Again, as I'm sure you're aware, the prison population in the U.S. continues to grow. It recently surpassed 2 million, which I guess proportionately, I saw a figure that proportionately more Americans are in prison than there are people in Russia. And I saw another figure that 11% of African American males in their 20s and 30s are behind bars. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I will go back and say that I think our friends in the media need to share some responsibility for that. I think that some of the reactions of state legislators as well as our national Congress have come as a result of scare tactics. They've taken cases that were bad, horrible cases, but they've made it sound as though those cases were rampant across the United States when the fact is they weren't. The American Correctional Association encourages research and careful thought before we make some major change in our laws. That has not occurred in the past. And we have been put in a position of receiving large numbers in our systems when, frankly, if we had had the option, there were other ways to deal with it.
And while the prison population's been sort of steadily increasing, crime's actually been on a downturn for a long time.
Particularly juvenile crime. But you still, if you talk to the man on the street, they have a fear of juvenile offenders, even though there is a fairly drastic decrease in juvenile crime.
So if crime's decreasing all this time, I know at the same time the reason prison population continues to build is because the sentences are being lengthened.
And some states have done away with parole, which means that instead of serving some period of time, getting some treatment, some training, and then being allowed to go out on parole, that you stay for your entire term in prison. These are the kinds of things we fought against.
So who is it predominantly that's filling the prisons now?
Who and what?
Different categories. For example, I know, I mean, what types of offenses are there?
Drug offenses are very, very large majority.
And I know there's also a growing segment of immigrants.
Yes, the fastest growing single group of offenders is the female.
Female immigrants?
No, or female offenders.
Female offenders.
Inclusive of immigrants, but female offenders, period.
Mm-hmm. What about this use of prisons to house immigrants? A lot of times asylum seekers trying to seek refuge in the U.S. and they're placed in a prison environment with criminal people who, you know, and...
Well, obviously, I think that the system has to be addressed in a more proactive way than it has been in the past. This is a situation that's fairly recent for us, and I think it's one of those things that rather than dealing with it, we let it happen, and now we're in a position of having to react to it. Obviously, there are probably better ways to do that, but right now, what we have is what's available. We don't like that any better than the general public would.
And what are your thoughts on the recent trend towards the privatization of prisons?
I think we've always had privatization of prisons. The difference is we now have privatization for profit. We've always had non-profit companies that charge for their services, but they were nonprofit. The money was put back into them. I think every state in the union has had groups that have taken offenders and provided housing or have provided special treatment programs. The privatization that you're talking about that started in the mid-1980s came in to fill a void. It came in when there was this large increase in the prison populations and state governments were simply unable to adequately house the number of offenders that the law changes were requiring they take. And the private sector came in, they could build prisons a lot quicker than a state agency could. And they got a foothold there. I don't have a problem at all as long as they adhere to the same standards and the same monitoring that public facilities adhere to. Because I think that keeps everybody honest. There's not going to be an exorbitant profit made. Because if the same standards are applied, there's a bid process for any private company to gain a contract to provide services, and then they have to do all of the things in that contract, goes out for bid, so it's going to be competitive. And I think that the concept of exorbitant profits being paid and the great conspiracy of the private sector to force legislators to contract with them, I just have not seen that.
So, well, okay, that sort of ties in. I was wondering about specifically with private prisons lobbying politicians, you know, large groups such as the Correction Corporations of America.
Lobbies, politicians. I go lobby for changes in the juvenile legislation in the state of Tennessee every time the legislature meets because there are some things we do that are just plain stupid. And we need to get them changed. I'm sure that private prisons want to be considered any time there's going to be a building program, but they're going to have to compete with not only the state agency, and sometimes state agencies just simply can't get the manpower in time to resolve a crowded condition or a lawsuit condition. Some of this came about in response to some large class action lawsuits that required that prisons get under certain numbers within a certain time frame. Well, in order to do that, you've got to have another facility or you've got to have some option for paroling inmates. And in many cases, that wasn't doable, or at least they didn't think it was doable.
Does the ACA have an official stance on the death penalty?
No. You will find members in the American Correctional Association who support it. You will find many other members that oppose it. So, no, there's never been a policy, as far as I can remember, that took a stand on that.
What are your thoughts on Illinois Governor Ryan's recent moratorium of the death penalty?
Well, obviously he's the governor. I think that an ounce of prevention is usually worth a pound of cure, and I don't see that the moratorium is going to hurt. Now, that is a personal opinion. That has nothing to do with ACA or the ACA conference. But I have seen in our state some effort to do similar things. Now, it's being met with opposition. There are those people that say, absolutely not, go on. So I don't know what we're going to do.
Your state being Tennessee. Okay, so where do we go from here? What's your personal and what's the ACA's larger vision for the future of criminal corrections?
We would still like to be the umbrella organization to provide training and networking opportunities to every aspect of the correctional family, including prevention and intervention, all the way to providing services and programs to those who may never come out of prison. I think we're in a unique position to do that and to work together. There's a tremendous amount of expertise in this convention hall. And by sharing with each other, sometimes we can solve a problem before it pops up because the problems are common. We have a lot of things in common. Sometimes it presents itself in different ways, but eventually we have to deal with it. We all have had to deal with legislators that have wanted to lock up everybody. We have all had to deal with the issue of getting adequate funding for programs. But when we come together, we can strategize, we can provide technical assistance, we can provide training that's specialized to the field, and I think it's well worth the time.